Good afternoon. On our program this afternoon, we have John Vinskelvin. Hi, John.
Hi, Doug. Who's he?
Well, I'm certainly glad to have you back here, because I look forward to these once a month.
Well, they're fun. They're fun doing them.
And I know we've got a lot of people.
I want people, though, to get the idea that I'm some old fogey, some old-timer who just can talk about the what used to be. You know, I'm still a real estate and insurance man, and we're still working.
And you're downtown working every day.
Yes, sir, in a brand-new office, right on the side. Right on the...
Well, you know, we were talking Saturday morning, this past Saturday, on your real estate program about the old band and the parade. And I was thinking, now Memorial Day has just passed. Did they have Memorial Day parades back then?
Yes, they had good ones.
Did they?
Yeah.
What kind of, were they mostly marchers or bands?
Yes, very similar to what they are today. I think more kids got out and they decorated more bicycles and you had a few horses in them and it was a little different. I used to get in the Memorial Day parade once in a while riding horseback.
Did you?
Mm-hmm, just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Get in the parade.
The parades I thought were especially interesting were these little torchlight parades you were talking about Saturday morning.
Yeah.
That really fascinated me, especially the idea of going and serenading or congratulating the winners of the elections by having a band play out in their yard.
Yeah, well, that was quite something.
Well, you know, that's almost a thing of the past, isn't it? But that's not such a bad idea to, once the election is over and the fight is over, to put things aside,
that's
the bad
right.
feelings and the fighting, and get back there and congratulate
them. In those days, they used to have an alderman from every ward.
Oh, yeah.
I met one of the, I guess it was a daughter of one of our present-day aldermen, and I said, oh, your dad is an alderman. She didn't know what an alderman was. That's a councilman now.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, some years ago they decided they didn't want to be called alderman anymore.
That's right, so they're councilmen now.
We talked about a band that you told me about, the Grand Haven Concert Band, I guess it was called.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't there some other, I remember seeing pictures of some other band.
Well, the Elks had a band. After the Grand Haven Concert Band broke up, there was a man by the name of Jones. I think it was Robert Jones, Bob Jones. And he was a member of the Elks. And he had played in the city band, the concert band. And I don't know why they broke up. I guess the members were getting older. And so it broke up. And so this Jones organized the Elks band. And they had a pretty good band, too. And they had... the Elks color, lavender and white. And they had a good band, but didn't last very long.
That doesn't seem to be the name I remember either.
Well, are you thinking of Thompson's Jackie Band?
That's what it is. I was going to say, it seems to me it was after somebody's name or
that
something.
That was a kid's band.
Oh, is that what that was?
That was a kid's band. That was Andy Thompson, who ran the American Brass Novelty Company down on the water. And he was, he was quite interested in kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked to play an instrument. I'd forgotten what he played. And he organized this band, and he had about 50 or more kids in it.
He did.
And they were kids of, at that time, 13, 14, well, equivalent to the school band now.
Wasn't there a school band then?
No.
Oh.
There wasn't a school band then. These kids were probably, as I say, about school age. I remember my brother Lewis played in it. And, we named the whole gang of them that played in it. I can think of them. And, I was talking with Jack Vancouvering yesterday. Jack Vancouvering got to be... with a Detroit Free Press, I believe it was, and a sports writer.
Oh, yes.
And then with a conservation, not the conservation department, but the conservation outdoor editor.
Oh, yes.
That's what it was. And he came over to the house and we visited. Well, he said he brought up the old Jackie Band.
Is that right?
He said he remembered playing.
Why did they call it the Jackie Band? What did
they
mean?
This was during the war, during World War I.
Oh.
And they wore Jackie Navy uniforms. They wore a little white hat like the Navy, and they wore a midi blouse and blue slacks. Or in those days, they didn't know what slacks were. They called them pants or trousers.
Yeah.
So they were dressed like... Well, the Elks had a convention in Chicago, and they took this Jackie band along with them to Chicago on the boat.
They did.
On the Alabama. And these kids paraded down Michigan Avenue in Chicago in the Elks convention.
No kidding.
They had quite a ball.
I'll bet they did. Were they good?
Yes, they were good. They were relatively good. I'd say they were better than relatively good for it. They put in a lot of time practicing. These kids were really in earnest.
And they had
a good time. I don't think they ever made a dime at it. I don't think they got paid for anything. Probably this time when they went to the Elks, they paid their expenses. And maybe they gave the kids some spending money. I don't know. I don't remember that. But
who paid for the uniform? They each paid for his own? Or?
I don't remember how they got those uniforms, but I rather think that each kid paid for his own. They weren't expensive. Like today, the German Bugle Corps uniforms going to cost $75.
Oh, I know.
I suppose in those days they cost $4 or $5.
Yeah.
Well, all it was a shirt and pants and a cap.
Mm-hmm.
And a cap like that you used to buy for 50 cents.
Yeah. So, whatever got this guy doing this? So that's really something. Is it for a local man?
Just his love for the kids and his love for music.
Was he an elderly man? Or what?
Yes, he was. He was a very fine gentleman, a Scotchman, very conservative. Lived over on the corner of 5th and Clinton Street. Had a nice home over there. And... He was a very fine citizen, a staunch Presbyterian.
Did business bring him to this town?
I presume so. I don't believe he was born here. I don't know. He was a lot older than I was.
Was he?
Yeah. So
really a commendable thing for a man.
He was always here.
Yeah, for a man to take on.
Yes, he was.
That's
and
a big project.
Claude Verdine's father was in that band as a teacher. I think Cale Verdine and... Andy Thompson were the two older members, and they had to sort of watch over these kids because kids were kids in those days, just the same as they are today. But they were all pretty nice kids. And in those days, there weren't the things to distract them and get them into problems that they are today. They didn't have automobiles at their disposal like they do today.
Yeah.
So it was mostly stay at home or walk wherever you wanted to go. So that was quite a pastime.
Where did they practice, John?
I think in the armory.
Oh, did they?
But I'm not sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
They might have used some of Andy Thompson's factory, too, at that time. And I believe they used the Presbyterian Church basement. That was the old Presbyterian church that's been torn down.
Oh, yeah.
But I believe they used the church basement there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, too, now. We're getting into warmer weather here. And you worked in a meat market at one time, didn't you?
Very little.
Oh.
My dad had the meat market.
Oh, did he?
I didn't work.
Well, you can help answer these things. So what did they do about the heat before they had all this refrigeration equipment?
They had an ice box.
Well, could that keep their meat for very long?
They kept it pretty well.
Did it?
Yeah. This was a walk-in cooler, the same as they have today. Of course, they were built into the building.
They were,
most of them, wood. And above the compartment where they kept the meat was ice. They'd put tons of ice in
there. Oh, I was going to say, a walk-in cooler would take some time to cool, boy.
Yes, yeah. The days that they brought ice was quite a deal. Verplank used to come over with ice, or Fox... There were two ice companies. I think there were three. Van Zanten and Fox from Spring Lake and Verplank. And they'd have a chute, kind of like a coal chute made of wood, and they'd get the ice on that and slide it because they had to get up above, see?
Oh.
So they'd back the wagon, the ice wagon. This was not a truck. This was an ice wagon. Back it up there and then shove the ice up this... Shoot and
what a job that must be. How big a chunk would they be when they push it?
100 pounds.
100 pounds at a time?
100 pounds at a time, yeah.
Who'd push it up? How could they do that? It'd take two, three guys, wouldn't it?
No, they have one on each side with a pike pole or a pole, and then somebody'd be up in the up in the cooler and place the ice. They'd have to pile it up.
What a job.
Yeah.
Where would they take the ice from? Where would they get it from?
Spring Lake.
Did they have a big building or something?
They'd cut it in the winter and store it, pack it in sawdust, and that
well,
was
it had a big kind of an insulated building
that
or something,
was,
too.
It was somewhat insulated. There was one of them over on Smith's Bio, and there was another one right in Spring Lake, down on the lake where there are all new houses there now, at the foot of, let's see, that'd be Jackson Street, I guess. And, yeah.
Would that ice last all summer?
Sure, they'd have ice all summer.
They would.
They had a problem getting it in the winter if we didn't have a cold enough
well,
winter.
Well, I was going to ask you, what would you do if you had a bad winter?
Well, they worried. They usually got it.
Did they?
Yeah. I think the good Lord took care of that for them. You got ice sometime or another. But
yeah.
Of course, the best thing to do was, the best time of the year would be along in January when it was early, and so they were assured of having it.
Yeah.
But, they put tons and tons of it. Oh, the Grand Trunk used to have a nice house right down at the foot of 2nd Street.
It did.
And that was an occupation for these fellows that worked in the freight house. When the boats came in, if the boats were not coming in because of the ice, they worked down there cutting ice. And they used to cut that ice with a saw.
That's what I was going to ask you. How in the world do you cut ice?
You cut it with a saw.
Kind of a saw.
A big, like a cross-cut saw, like they used to saw trees down with.
Really?
And then they got smarted up, and they got a motor, an automobile motor, on a buzz saw. And they rigged that up so they could pull that along and cut the ice.
Boy, that
they
seems
They cut
like
it in long strips, maybe 100 or 200 feet long, and then they would cut crossways, and they'd get this ice in pretty good-sized pieces, and they'd slide it up the chute. They had chutes there, too, and they had those fixed with a pulley. A motor would heist it up there, and there again they had to put this ice in the ice house and pile it up, pack it in.
How would they must have to put something between the slabs
sawdust.
Of ice? Would sawdust take care of it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that ice would last.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Did anybody? It seems like that's dangerous, isn't it, John? Cutting those big holes in the lake.
Yes, I don't remember. I don't remember distinctly whether anybody was ever drowned cutting ice or not.
It doesn't seem safe, does it?
It wouldn't be for me.
Ooh.
And getting that cool water would be pretty hard to get out.
Yeah.
But there were always a lot of people around. When they were cutting ice, there were dozens of men down there cutting ice.
John, those must have been big buildings. If they stored up ice for a whole summer.
They were big buildings. I think Verplank had a couple of them.
Oh.
And I don't know what Fox, but I remember Fox's ice house right there on, I think that's Barber Street in Spring Lake, was a big ice house. And I know the one that Verplank had over on Smith's Bio was a big one, and so was the Grand Trunk.
Uh-huh.
200-300 feet long and maybe 100 feet wide, and they were high, big, tall building.
This was a year-round business for these people. Then.
Yes, it was. You betcha.
Would you sell ice? I suppose you'd sell ice in the winter, too, to a certain extent.
I suppose
for ice boxes.
Ice cream and so on and so
forth. Yeah, ice cream.
The butcher didn't need it in the winter because they left the butcher shop open. The front door was open. The meat hung up in the racks in the butcher shop.
Really?
They even used to hang a side of beef outside.
They did.
On display. I got a picture of a meat market that was right downstairs in this building. And that's where the fire started.
Where, down where the jewelry store is now, or where your old office was?
No, it's about where the jewelry store, or probably where Reichardt's is.
Oh.
And there's a side of beef hanging out on a rack. Outdoor,
outside?
Outside of the market, yeah.
Well, now they wouldn't do that in the warm weather, would they?
No. They did. They'd have it full of flies.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to get bugs.
And there were flies around in those days.
Almost.
So they didn't have DDT.